Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing taxing, loan forgiveness, everyday money fights, and virtuous investing.
Yeah, virtuous investing. We're going to talk about investing that gives you all the good feels later on during this episode. But this is our Friday Flight, where we're going to talk about the most important stories that we think you should be paying attention to this week. But Joel, we should. This isn't something we mentioned on our last Friday Flight last week because, I don't know, we knew that we were going, but we just didn't talk about it. We were at FinCon as that episode came out. And FinCon, for folks, is a financial conference.
Some would say the nerdiest place on earth, Matt.
It is quite nerdy, but it's just a great time for us to be able to just meet up with other
personal finance
creators. And these are a lot of folks who were there, who spoke actually, have been on our show. I'm thinking of like Patrice Washington was there, Anthony O'Neill.
Erica Taylor.
That's right. Erica Taylor.
A lot of great folks.
Taylor Made Budgets.
That's right.
But the ability just to see a bunch of Carl and Mindy Jensen and Carl, okay. Mr. 1500.
Like a personal finance power couple.
Yeah, there are a lot of our friends who were there. And so we didn't talk about it ahead of time because it's more of a nerdy thing. But it is a lot of fun for us to be able to meet up with some of these folks, see the content that they're creating and how they're going about it. It can be really encouraging to us.
For sure.
And we also, while we were there, we took a bunch of our How to Money socks. The coolest socks in personal finance. And
nobody's got
on our socks. Those things are awesome. We stuck those on a bunch of our friends, gave those away. And speaking of our socks, we're actually going to, it's now time to give away five pairs of our How to Money socks to, and listen up, we're going to narrow the focus a little bit here as to who is eligible for these socks, but we're going to give five pairs of socks away to five new subscribers to the How to Money newsletter.
That's right. The finest socks in the land that represent one of your hopefully favorite podcasts. They're super comfortable, super attractive. But if you go and sign up for the How to Money newsletter before Wednesday at midnight, you're going to be automatically entered to win a pair of these socks. We'll ship them out to you. And we'll announce the winners on our next Friday flight.
That's right.
And to be honest, you're going to get the added value of not just receiving the socks, but also receiving delightful, entertaining personal finance content in your inbox
personal finance
every single week.
Content that's going to fuel you throughout the week.
It's going to revolutionize your life. Okay. Maybe that's too strong of a claim, but it's fun. It's a good newsletter.
And specifically, the way you sign up for that newsletter, head to howtomoney.com/newsletter.
We'll link to it in the show notes as well.
We'll link to it in the show notes. And specifically, too, for all of you folks out there who are listening to the show and you're not subscribed, this is an awesome opportunity because you're not competing with like thousands of other folks. There might be, I don't know, maybe there's like 20, 30, even 50 or 100 folks who sign up. You are going to have a
chances are better than ever.
Yeah, the odds are totally in your favor.
That's right.
So we want you to do that.
Let's take a Hunger Games line.
Send those out to you soon.
All right. Well, let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday flight. It's a quick sampling of stories we found interesting this week. It's what we do every Friday. Matt and I, we parse through the headlines and we tell you what's relevant to you in the world of personal finance. And let's talk about inflation for a second, Matt. I feel like we got to lead off with that. I don't know about you.
It's kind of the story of the week.
It is. I personally have not heard the word transitory in quite some time. It's one of those words that for a minute, a couple of years ago, it was like the buzzword. It could have been like the word of the year on Time Magazine.
2021's word of the year, right. Transitory.
Right. It turns out that inflation is much stickier than experts had hoped it would be. And even as like supply chains are functioning better and with a steep decline in gas prices, we're still seeing the headline inflation number barely budge. And that's because the cost of groceries is continuing to go up alongside a lot of other categories that we've been talking about here on the show. In particular, housing. Whether you're buying or renting, right? Prices there have skyrocketed, which is a huge part of what's contributing to inflation that doesn't want to budge very much.
In particular, would be surprised if we see rents continue to climb. I think we've seen home purchase prices cap out a little bit, but as far as the rental prices that folks are paying, I think we're going to continue to see those climb in the coming months.
I think you might be right. And while the cost of other goods and services like travel and used cars have begun to decline a little bit at least, it's just moving slow, and that means consumer costs are not getting better. The CPI number hasn't changed very much. And so, sadly, inflation continues to be just a massive problem for anybody out there who spends money on anything.
Yeah, I think I saw that the same basket of goods and services cost the average family $460 more per month now than it did a year ago. And granted, a lot of folks have been able to use the hot labor market to their advantage in order to get paid more. But still, this inflation, it continues to remain a real problem. And sticky inflation, it's the major reason why the number of folks who are experiencing money stress has been on the rise. The American Psychological Association, they just released a study. And it turns out that 72% of Americans say that they're stressed about their current financial situation. And right on cue, the journal, they documented the rise in fights among couples over just simple expenses like grocery store purchases.
Like, are they actually getting into fights in the grocery store? Like, put that kumquat back. It's too much.
I mean, quite literally, yeah. Like, they're talking about the different disagreements that couples are having, not only within grocery stores, but just the price of gas and utilities are affecting how people feel about their money. And younger folks are actually the most stressed out. More than 8 in 10 folks who are aged basically millennials, right? 18 to 43. So it's kind of like millennials.
Some Gen Z too, yeah.
A little bit of Gen Z, a little bit of the Zoomers as well.
Mostly. That's like our audience. That's how old they are.
Basically, everybody's listening, or not everybody, I guess.
Most of them.
The vast majority of folks, 18 to 43. But they are the most stressed out about their personal finances. We totally get it. These are conversations that Kate and I have had recently. I mean, gone are the days where we were paying a dollar per person per meal. That has not been the case for a while. Like, I mean, the cost of eggs, 40% more.
Yeah.
Today than they were a year ago. That is completely insane. For us, it's causing us to have maybe not heated discussions, but we're having more discussions about what we're starting to axe
You're yelling at Kate over kumquats too, aren't you? You're part of the problem.
Maybe seltzers.
Dude.
Y'all yes. too?
Well, we, for a minute there, we were seltzer people. Not me, but my wife and kids. And yeah. I swear.
The kids?
The most annoying part? Yes.
Forget that, dude.
The most annoying part was that half-drank cans of seltzer were being left around the house. I'm like, putting into it right now.
You can't leave the soldiers behind.
No.
Like, yeah, never.
No more seltzer.
My sacrifice has been ice cream. I love ice cream.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't need that crap in my life. And so that's something I am like, all right, let's just completely eliminate that. And I don't know. In some ways, I feel that this is almost a good exercise because it allows folks to sort of dig deep and realize, okay, what is it that I can live without? What are the things that are important to my health? What are the important groceries and foods that we need to be eating? And I think there's a lot of crap that we can cut from our diets.
Yeah. And the more that we can handle our money better in other areas of life too, hopefully the less stressed out we'll become around money. That's like what we want for our listeners, Matt, is for them to be empowered based on their ability to up their savings rate so they have more margin, more breathing room, so that even as inflation is a real thorn in their side, they're like, you know what? I don't have to be stressed out about this because I know where my money's going and I'm handling it well.
And that's right.
It doesn't mean that it's a good thing. It's still a pain in the butt.
Welcome to the empowerment zone. That'll be our, we should have a segment on Fridays.
All right.
That's the whole show. The whole show is all about empowerment and getting folks to make smart moves with their money. So
exactly. Well, let's talk about college for a second, Matt, because we've actually talked about how college degrees are not necessarily the best use of your money. We talked about that recently, how they're actually worth less than they used to be. That was episode 548. And the truth is, the reality is, we have a supply and demand problem, that the market has been flooded with college graduates over the last couple decades. And in a lot of fields, there's just a whole lot more supply of folks with a college degree than there is demand for people with those degrees. And that is in part why 2 in 5 graduates, according to a recent survey, have expressed regret over their chosen field of study. And on top of that, nearly half of those who got a degree in the humanities and the arts said they'd wish they'd chosen to pursue a different degree. And so, Matt, I know we got some pushback on that college episode. Some people were like, why are you guys hating? As always, we try to take the nuanced approach where,
sure,
for some folks, for a lot of folks, a college degree can be meaningful, can create additional lifetime earnings. So much of it depends on your personality and your skill set. But you know, I feel like we're treating college degrees like they're a no-duh path to a middle-class lifestyle. And that's less the case than it has been. And the reality on the ground is revealing, I would say, that fewer folks are having that experience, right? Especially as prices are rising exponentially. The cost is a huge factor in whether or not a college degree makes sense for people. And something else that came out this week, 19 of the top 20 colleges in the U.S. News & World Report rankings cost more than $55,000 a year to attend.
Dang.
Not for the whole degree, a year. So we're talking about like $250,000 of debt potentially, if there are no scholarships involved, for your college degree. And when we're talking about costs that are that extreme to get a degree, we've got to think long and hard about what the final outcome is going to be, the value proposition, the trade-off of time and money to get that degree. What is it actually going to provide in the end? And so it's interesting to see how many people are expressing regret over the degree they've gotten. I think so much of that comes down to how much it costs to get it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. And we're not haters. You know, like we said before, like college, it can be an awesome path for a lot of folks. Because in large part, they're able to provide higher lifetime earnings and it oftentimes provides more job satisfaction. But the risk to reward ratio has just changed when it comes to pursuing a higher education. And yeah, as costs have risen exponentially and the value of many degrees, we're seeing them decline. And because of that, it's up to individuals to be more careful on the front end before they mindlessly choose a college or a course of study. And so whether we're talking about your kids or your friends or like you yourself, we want your eyes to be wide open and within this decision-making process where you're able to try to figure out what you think the likely ROI of that degree is going to be. You know, the reality is that like some degrees are going to just be worth more than others. And many of those worthwhile degrees can actually be pursued for a lot less money than you think. And, you know, if you want to study something that doesn't hold as much value in the marketplace, it's even more important to keep costs to a minimum.
Yeah, if you really, really want that basket weaving degree, I think it's okay as long as you count the cost and you have the cash to pay for it. But if you're taking on student loan debt, tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt to get a degree that in all likelihood isn't going to lead to a higher paying job, that's when you're in big trouble,
right?
That's when you've got debt and nothing really to show for it. Well, so speaking of college, Matt, student loan forgiveness, let's talk about that for a second. That continues to be a hot topic and there's more information coming out about it. We talked about it recently in depth and we said that student loan borrowers aren't going to be paying income tax on the forgiveness amount. And that is true. The folks aren't going to be paying federal income tax on the amount that they're forgiven. But state taxes are another issue. Mm-hmm. And so it's come out this week that a bunch of states are in line to send a tax bill to forgiveness recipients. And this is subject to change. State governments can make exceptions and can pass legislation to prevent that from happening. But states like North Carolina, Indiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, even California are all, at least for now.
Even California. You mean, of course, California.
Well, no, I mean, California, I would think that they would actually be on board with the feds on this, but I don't know.
They love taxing their citizens.
They do have, what, the highest individual income tax rate in the country.
They have all the highest taxes. Yeah. It's something like 13 states in total who are considering taxing the amount that was forgiven.
Yeah. So this is subject to change, but it's something to be aware of, and we'll link to that in the show notes. An article about this, but they're planning on sending you a tax bill. And how much are you going to owe is the next question. It depends on how much forgiveness you received and the state income tax thresholds where you live. Lots of folks are likely going to end up owing somewhere between $500 and $1,000 in additional state income taxes come April if there's no pivot made. And so, yeah, just a heads up to start mentally and financially preparing for that. The mm-hmm. forgiveness feels good, but you might be taxed, at least at the state level, on some of that forgiveness.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that's some bad news when it comes to taxes. On a positive note, the IRS is going to be refunding over $1 billion to evidently any taxpayers who missed deadlines for filing their 2019 and their 2020 tax returns. And so the way it works, you know, typically the IRS, they charge you a fee for filing late, but because of the pandemic, the kind-hearted suit-wearing folks over there at the Internal Revenue Service.
They're so sweet.
They're going to send that money back to you. It's something like, I think, like 1.6 million Americans are going to be eligible for this refund. And the best part is you don't have to do anything. It's going to be automatic. That is actually, unless you haven't, if you still haven't filed your taxes for
if you're that late
for those years.
You're like literally the latest person out there.
Yeah, if that's the case, you need to get on it because you have until September 30th to finally get those returns in. And also, you know, don't get used to this kind of generosity from the IRS. I don't think this is likely to be normal moving forward. I feel like they're just throwing everybody one final pandemic bone.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, don't count on this in the future.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sweetheart IRS folks, for anybody who was late. That is going to that could be hundreds and hundreds of dollars in late fees that they are able to avoid that are going to get automatically refunded to them. Which is nice.
Absolutely. I think that the average refund amount is going to be something like $750.
Yeah.
So maybe you filed late, you already paid that fee. And also maybe your state that you're living in is going to charge you for the student loans that were, that were forgiven. So hang on to that
money.
Might
all come out in the wash.
Exactly. But at least it's not feeling like that you're paying even more out of pocket.
Yeah.
But we've got additional stories that we're going to get to this week, including that virtuous investing story. We'll get to that plus others right after this. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, You already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, the Friday flight continues, and Matt, we got to get to our ludicrous headline of the week. And typically, we find something from a newspaper, a television station somewhere around the country that annoys us or irks us, or maybe it just is worded poorly and makes us think something that maybe they weren't trying to do. Just bad headlines are all over the place. But this week's comes in the form of a tweet. I think it's maybe our first time to do this. Who's out there making predictions again? Of course, it's the rich dad, poor dad guy, Robert Kiyosaki, and he tweeted last week.
It's his pastime.
he likes to tweet, and he likes to tweet.
Making those predictions.
Dumb things. And he likes to use all caps in a lot of his tweets, too, which I think is, I don't know if that's just a generational thing, or...
Yeah, it's kind of a classic boomer move.
Okay, boomer.
Not to hate on any of our boomer listeners out there, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know. How often do you tweet in all caps?
How often do I tweet is a better question. Rarely, but in all caps, never.
Probably never.
Yeah. Well, he tweeted, "The crash is here." I'm trying to emphasize it like he does.
Is that how he, that's how he wrote it?
Yes. And, and then he said, "Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETF, and real estate crashing as predicted. Middle class being wiped out." And then what did he proceed to do? He proceeds to tell all of his followers to buy silver. This guy, Matt, he tends to make a prediction every single year at a random time, typically in the fall, I feel like, but his track record just isn't great. He's wrong most of the time. And there was another article this week. Analysts at Morgan Stanley are predicting a major market downturn over the next 4 months. And all these things, like these predictions, what's our response to them? Who cares? Because the reality is, like, if anyone was paying attention this week, the market was down almost 4.5% in a day, like the largest single day drop since 2020. Mm-hmm. But to us, that doesn't matter. That's short-term stuff that we don't care about. The same is true, right? If we experience more volatility and downward movement in the coming months, we're long-term investors here at How to Money. And so we expect these short-term blips. We choose not to pay attention to them. And could these predictions come to pass? Sure.
It might happen.
But Mr. Kiyosaki has also made a lot of predictions that have not come to pass. And if you believe these predictions, if you buy them hook, line, and sinker, and you make your investing decisions based on them, it's far more likely that you're going to lose money than make it.
Yeah. And again, we bring this to your attention because it's okay if you notice that folks are out there saying these kinds of things, but we don't want you to take action with your actual money.
You could just unfollow, too.
That is true.
For the bad advice and for all the caps tweets.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of taking the wrong actions, the wrong steps with your money, friend of the show, Lindsay Bell, she actually tweeted out a shocking chart this week. It turns out that millennials are selling stocks like it's their job. Data from Ally shows that 49% of millennials have sold stocks over the past 12 months, whereas only 17% of Zoomers did the same thing. And one of the main reasons that they cited as a reason for selling was volatility. Man, this honestly, this kind of makes me mad because this points to a lack of financial education. Because volatility within the stock market is to be expected. It's just an inevitable part of the wealth building process. But when you sell, you're often locking in losses in an attempt to time the market. None of us obviously are smart enough to do that successfully, though. And so this is not something we would recommend. We want you to just continue buying. You're going to see the volatility. You might see the market crash, just like Robert Kiyosaki mentioned. But that doesn't mean you have to actually take action and do anything about it.
Makes me think of our interview with Nick Majuli. His book was called Just Keep Buying.
Just Keep Buying.
And I love that phrase. That's how we should think about investing in the market. Just keep buying through thick and through thin,
head down, ups and through downs, to invest,
and you'll be wealthy at some point. That's just the way it goes. Mm-hmm. You don't really have to pay attention to day to day movements or movements year to year even. All right, man. Let's keep talking about investing though, because let's talk about 401ks in particular. Because folks who got their Q2 401k statement, they might have noticed that it looked a little bit different than it normally does, and that's because there's now a requirement for 401k providers to attach what's known as a lifetime income illustration. And by you, I don't know, when I say illustration, you might think like doodles of Disney pictures or something like that. No, that's not what we're talking about. This is basically an attempt to give people a picture of how much monthly income they can expect based on their total nest egg.
Yeah, yeah. And illustration and picture may be inaccurate words as well, because I don't even think it's a chart or anything like that. It's just kind of like a table with some numbers on
yes.
it. That kind of gives you a heads up.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, this comes from the SECURE Act, which was passed in 2019, which now made this a legal requirement.
Yeah.
And it might be disconcerting because let's say you've got $120,000 in your retirement account. Well, you'll realize based on this lifetime income illustration that you should be able to expect $500-ish a month in income when you reach retirement age. But here's the thing. The younger you are, the less this matters, right? The goal really should be to just increase your overall nest egg, ramping up the amount you're able to contribute while paying very little attention to these details about how much you're going to be able to spend in retirement. And for folks closer to retirement, I think this can be maybe a helpful wake-up call to start socking away even more. You might realize, let's say you're in your 50s and you're listening to HTM and you're like, ah, man, I just got that. And my lifetime income illustration shows that, yeah, I'm only going to be able to expect $700 or $800 a month in income from my retirement accounts. You might need to increase your contribution level so that you can catch up. But the reality is you might also have a pension from somewhere else. And you got to factor Social Security in too. So there's a lot to think about. I think this lifetime income illustration can be helpful, but I think for some folks it can also be shocking and they just like have no idea what to do with it.
I mean, I think that's the whole point, right? Is hopefully it shocks you into doing something different with your money, because in the end, hopefully you're able to see that, oh yeah, $600 a month. That's not quite enough for me to live on.
Yeah.
If I were to retire right now, this is not feasible. And so sort of like we were saying earlier, I feel like that it can provide some empowerment to folks to realize there are steps I can take right now to change how much I've got within my 401k. I think one of the things,
bumping your 401k contributions up a percent or two, like
it's going to make a massive difference.
Meaningful
impact. That's where maybe this illustration could do better in the future, is if they had like some projections or something, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the criticism might be that it's just a snapshot of what your nest egg is currently and what that would provide you.
Yep.
But
not like, based on your age or future returns.
Exactly. Or how long you're planning to work. Because if you knew that, okay, well, it's only $125,000 now, but like I just started last year. Well, I guess not.
That'd be impressive.
Not last year, but I guess like 5-10 years ago. But if you know you've got another 20 years worth of your career ahead of you, and you can map that out, if they had like a little dash line with an increased 401k amount, and then what that would allow you to withdraw every single month. I think that's the part of it that can be encouraging to me.
Basically,
you
know? This illustration could use a lot of work to better serve people.
But I do like the spirit behind it, because it just allows folks, it's a tool, right? And it allows folks to peer into the future in the same way that we joke and literally have done this, but using the Face app to see an older version of yourself. I think in particular for younger investors, if they can see, $600 oh my gosh, that's not a whole lot of money. I need to start saving more now. In that way, it does allow us to look down the road a little bit and to essentially forecast and realize, okay, maybe I've been embracing that YOLO lifestyle a little too much. Maybe I need to travel a little bit less and instead divert some of those funds towards my retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or stop eating out so much. Yeah. That's another thing. It's expensive. Well, one thing we prefer you not to invest in within your 401k is ESG funds. And we've talked about this a few times on the show, and I think any How to Money listener knows it. They're not our favorite. Because the goal of these funds, really, it's to allow folks to invest in what we would call a virtuous way, in a socially responsible way. But as you've heard us say, they often don't do an awesome job at it. Friend of the show and recent guest, Allison Schrager, she just wrote a great article for City Journal about how the ESG bubble is starting to burst. And at the heart of the problem that she expounded on was virtuous investing. It's kind of hard to define. Are oil companies awful, or are they currently just the cheapest way to power economic development, particularly in the developing world?
Exactly. Yeah. Do you care more about the earth and utilizing fossil fuels less, or do you care about maybe equity amongst all the different nations, in particular in the developing world?
These are more complex questions than sometimes we give them credit
for. Exactly. It's not just like good versus evil.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that's how, you know, ESG investing is, that's what they're setting out to do. They're there to say, oh, but this is good. But okay, according to what parameters, to whose definition?
And every ESG fund is created differently. Some invest in Tesla, some don't. Some invest in oil companies, some don't. Mm-hmm. Some invest in Facebook, who is potentially ruining our society, others don't, right? I mean, and that is legitimate concerns.
Sure.
And returns from these funds, they're not matching up with their index counterparts either. So spending your money, we would say, in a way that aligns with your values is something worth doing, is something worth pursuing. But it's not as easy to invest in a similar manner. And it's likely to cost you more in fees and returns if you try.
Yep.
So you're going to be less financially stable. You're not going to build wealth as quickly. There are just legitimate downsides to investing in these ESG funds, trying to invest in a virtuous way.
Yeah. I mean, you can clearly, it will cost you more if it says the expense ratio is higher than the 0.03% that you should be paying.
Which they inevitably are, yeah.
Or I was looking at Vanguard's ESGV. They're only 0.06, which is, as they go, that's almost as cheap as you can get. The industry average is like 0.4%, which is way higher than what anybody should be paying out there for a widely diversified index fund.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like you said, the performance of these ESG funds has been, it was actually looking slightly better than the stock market as a whole or the S&P. As we were in a bull market when everyone's feeling great about everything, but then as soon as things have turned around a little bit and we've entered into a bear market, these ESG funds have not performed well. So yeah, like you said, they cost more, they are not performing, not to mention they aren't doing whatever it is that you think they're doing. Like, you might get the good feels again from investing in something that feels more green, but the reality is it may not even be doing that all that well.
Yeah, I think we might get some pushback, Matt. Some people might be like, why don't Matt and Joel care about the earth or care about being virtuous citizens? We would say
that's because Joel's too busy out there coal rolling.
Right, exactly. There are so many little decisions you can make that are good for the earth and good for your wallet. We just think ESG funds are not necessarily one of them.
True.
All right, but let's move on, Matt. Let's talk about new phones, because Apple had their infamous event last week that used to be so much more popular. I remember New York Times writers used to live stream their comments on what Apple was releasing. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore, but Apple just released their newest version of the iPhone 14. And I don't really care about that, but a new survey found that 1 in 5 folks are more than willing to go into debt in order to buy the new iPhone. And that's according to Wallet Hub. When I saw that stat, Matt, that's something I got in the email inbox. It made my usual optimistic self a little bit bummed. It made me sad about the state of humanity, because the reality is that, as The Atlantic noted this week, the iPhone, it's just not cool anymore. So the changes...
Even if it was cool, it doesn't change our opinion, right?
Yes. Even if it was still hip, which I don't think it is, I think it's bad to go into debt for it.
Yeah. We were just talking about student loans before the break. You need to be careful about the kind of debt that you take on. Obviously, mm-hmm. student loans has more promising potential, and we're talking about consumption here, basically financing lifestyle, which is not something that we can get behind at all.
Yeah. And the reality is that the iterations of smartphones are infinitesimally small these days. The difference between an iPhone 13 and an iPhone 14 is pretty minimal. Yet there's going to be a whole lot of people that decide to upgrade to an ever so slightly better iPhone and put it on a credit card that they can't pay off in order to get a new phone. And so, I don't know, what we would say, if you prefer to buy a way more expensive phone that's barely improved, that's okay. Just don't go into debt to buy one. And make sure that you're doing it intentionally. Don't fall victim to the upgrade cycle. Every time something new comes out, you're like, oh yeah, knee-jerk reaction, Pavlov's dog, I'm going to get that thing, even though it's probably not going to make much of a difference in your life.
Why are you such an iPhone hater,
Joel? I'm a Pixel guy. Even though
you and your busted, I'm looking at your crack.
Hey, your it's a great phone.
Your brand new crack phone right now.
I love it.
I'll say I'm a 13 iPhone 13 Pro owner. Forget the 14. Like you said, Joel, like there were very few upgrades to that. Just get the 13 Pro for much less, and I'll advocate a little bit for Apple here. At least they did increase the price of their phones, because that was one thing that everybody was thinking it might go up $100 or so. And they held the line.
How many years did you take between upgrades? Wasn't it close to five years?
Yeah, 5 years, baby.
5 years. Yeah. I think that the average upgrade cycle is a whole lot less than that.
Yeah, exactly.
And the longer we
that's what we're trying to keep folks from just continuing to go down that path.
Yeah, the longer we can make our upgrade cycle, if you normally do it on 2 year cycles, we try to expand to three.
Yep.
And if we can,
and you should be able to do that, because these phones are getting better and better.
Going back to the going green conversation too, Matt, like less waste, less e-waste.
Exactly. So yeah, actually, speaking of smartphones, the Fairphone, they got some love in the Times this week. Was it Alex, listener Alex? He told us about these phones a while back. Sadly, they're only available in Europe. But the cool thing about those phones is that they can last you a really long time, because as the batteries, as your storage gets outdated or filled up, as camera technology improves, you can upgrade all of these different elements on your own Fairphone pretty easily. Like they're literally built for you to tinker with, so that they don't ever have to become obsolete. A Fairphone is the type of phone that Tinkerbell would totally use. The reality, though, is that most phones, they're not designed for longevity. And so, you know, were they to do that, that it would undermine the company's bottom line. And so we would love to see someone take the Fairphone business model, launch it here in the United States. That right there, that might be something that causes me to jump off of the Apple iPhone ship.
Yeah.
If I can, mess around with my own phone, swap little parts in and out like it's a Lego phone, but that doesn't completely fall apart when you were to drop it. I'm just picturing our kids are really getting into, you know, tinkering with Legos and Tinker Toys, that kind of stuff. But every time another kiddo bumps into it, it just falls apart. Hopefully that doesn't happen to their Fairphone. But
yeah, people who have it say that it's great.
It's supposed to be fantastic.
Planned obsolescence,
super repairable,
is still a real problem in our economy. And and I will admit, one of the worst things about Google is they don't commit to as long of a software upgrade cycle as Apple does to their phones. Yeah. And that's a real problem. So I'm going to call out both companies. they really should both be doing a better job at making sure their products can last longer for people, including software upgrades and hardware that's more interchangeable.
That's right. There is room for improvement on both fronts. But that's going to be it for our Friday flight. Don't forget How to Money Socks. If you are not a subscriber to our newsletter, head to howtomoney.com/newsletter. But if you sign up for that newsletter by Wednesday at midnight, you will be entered to win one of five pairs of socks, and we will announce those winners on our next Friday flight.
No doubt. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.